Tak.
Αγαπητοί φίλοι, γεια σας. Καλώς ορίσατε σε ακόμη ένα επεισόδιο Business Talks εδώ στους Talkers. Είμαι ο Πόλης Ξηναρής. Κάντε subscribe στο κανάλι μας στο YouTube και στο Spotify να ενημερώνεστε πρώτοι. Και σήμερα έχω τη χαρά να φιλοξενώ στο στούντιο μαζί μου τον πρέσβη του Ισραήλ, με τον οποίο θα μιλήσουμε για πάρα πολλά πράγματα τα οποία ενδιαφέρουν, για τις σχέσεις Κύπρου-Ισραήλ, για την προσπάθεια ειρήνης στη Γάζα, για τις εμπορικές, οικονομικές και στρατιωτικές συμφωνίες και ό,τι άλλο μας επιτρέψει ο χρόνος μας. Mr. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
The pleasure is all mine. And I would like to start this conversation with the latest developments in your home country, in the region of Gaza, where we have a plan by the US, supported by many other countries, in having a final peace solution in the area. How is it going so far?
Well, it's going okay. Okay, it's going okay because this plan is based on stages. There's one layer after the other that needs to be accomplished. I see that we are very close, very near to completing the first stage. The first stage included Israel redeploying in the Gaza Strip along what is known as the Yellow Line, which gives about 53% of the Strip under Israel control and 47% is under the Palestinian control. It is the release of all the hostages that we had in the hands of Hamas, both the living one and the deceased one. All of the live ones were already returned to Israel. Mm-hmm. We are now down to only 4 dead hostages that have not yet been returned. Mm-hmm. And we still hope that this will happen very soon. In exchange, we have released convicted terrorists to the hands of the Palestinians. 250 convicted terrorists plus another 1,700, 1,800, I don't remember the exact number, of detainees. Mm-hmm. And another element there was the expansion of the aid flowing into Gaza, which is happening. We have hundreds of trucks now going into Gaza every day. So we are very close to completing the first stage. So this is the good part. The second stage, it needs to start now, which has a key element, which is very important. And this is the disarming of Hamas. Hamas needs to disarm itself, lay down its weapons, the Gaza Strip needs to be demilitarized, and the Palestinian society needs to be de-radicalized. These are the most important things that will allow and will enable a situation in which we'll have a reconstruction, a rehabilitation in Gaza. To achieve this, there are several international bodies that need to be in place. There's going to be some sort of a peace council led by President Trump, but the guy that will do the work will be former Prime Minister Tony Blair. Mm-hmm. There needs to be an international stabilization force, the ISF, which is now being assembled. So there is still way to go. Mm-hmm. But the key, and this is what I want to stress, the key is the disarming of Hamas. Mm-hmm. Without disarming of Hamas, there is a consensus that in order for Gaza to have a future, Hamas cannot be part of this future. So this is the key element here, and we need to wait and see how this is going to be implemented.
This issue has been going for years and years and years, trying to combat Hamas, disarm Hamas, so there is, in your view, as I understand, a peace in the area. So even now that we have a peace treaty, how is the Hamas going to be disarmed? Are they going to give up weapons on their own because finally they have a peace treaty? Or is there another way to secure that this is going to happen step by step?
This is a very good answer. Sorry, a very good question that I'm not convinced that I have a good answer to it. If you read the 20 points, the plan of the 20 points that was put forward by President Trump, that both sides agreed to, point number 13 is very, very, very clear on this issue. The plan President Trump's plan does not say how this is going to happen. It just said it has to happen. The disarming of Hamas, the laying down of its weapon has to happen. And as I said before, both sides in principle accepted this plan. How this is going to be implemented, I think that the jury is still out on this issue. let's see what will be the role of the International Stabilization Force, how they're going to implement this role, are they going to do something in this regard? Everybody has question marks about mm-hmm. how this is going to happen. And I'm not here to say that I have any kind of an exclamation mark, this is how it's going to happen. But I truly believe that for the Palestinians' sake themselves, if they want to have a better future, some kind of a change in the way that they conduct themselves has to happen.
Mm-hmm. And part of this reconstruction, let's say things go smoothly one way or another, it's not going to be easy, but let's say at the end of the day they move forward. Is Israel going to be part of the reconstruction of Gaza? Or, I mean, who is going to put the money? Who is going to rebuild that area?
The involvement of Israel will be more in the form of facilitation, not any kind of direct involvement on the ground, but, you know, there is no port in Gaza. So if things need to be imported and being brought into Gaza, they go through the Israeli port of Ashdod. We need to facilitate the transfer like we already do. Mm-hmm. Or trucks going into the Gaza Strip from the Israeli territory. So we are very much there. And I would, again, use the term facilitation. It's not mm-hmm. active involvement on the ground, building, rehabilitating on any sort, but on the envelope of things, we have to be involved in order to facilitate what is required. Where does the money would come from? I would say, generally speaking, the international community is the one that will be probably paying to make this happen. Mm-hmm. This includes Arab countries, it includes probably European countries and others that are interested to see a change in this region and understand that it would be much more costly not to have this change. Mm.
And in order to have long-lasting peace, usually we need to have prosperity as well. So it seems that there are too many things to happen until we reach that point. What kind of backing up, or let's say, how much elasticity do you have to make things happen?
I need to understand the question.
Yes.
So I can answer.
Are you ready to make maybe some compromises along the way, or be somewhat elastic in some areas for the greater benefit of the area, or whatever is agreed, it should be followed 100%?
Okay, there are several things here that I will try to unpack in what you said. First, I think that we, in principle, very much agree with the idea that in order for things to be stabilized in this region, it is important that all those that are involved, Israelis and Palestinians, will have something to lose. That means prosperity is important, and we are very much interested in seeing prosperity among our neighbors. Mm-hmm. This is as a principle. Then there's a question of flexibility. There is flexibility. There's always flexibility, but it depends on what are the issues. There are issues that we will not be able to be flexible, especially issues that has to do with the security of our own citizen. Mm-hmm. Now, October 7, 2023, the massacre carried out by Hamas is a huge trauma in Israel. It's very hard sometimes for people to fully understand what was the experience from the Israeli point of view. The feeling that the terrorists come to your own house where you feel most safe and most secure, get into your house, kill you, your family, rape, burn down to the ground. It's the materialization of nightmares. Mm-hmm. And people still today are still living in this feeling of we must not let this ever happen again. And you can see that Israel's policy in the region has changed because of this. This is why we will not allow neither Hezbollah or Hamas or anyone else to amass, to start rebuilding the capability that can threaten us. We did this before. We let Hamas build itself up without being actively involved, we are not doing it anymore. So when it comes to security, there is not much flexibility. But you know, on other issues, there is more flexibility. Mm-hmm. I think that we show this flexibility on a day-to-day kind of basis. I know that bad news travel better and faster than good news, but every day there are things that are happening with, for example, sick people that need to go out of Gaza and get treatment. By the hundreds and thousands of them are happening, and Israel is facilitating this as well. Mm-hmm. So there is flexibility, not an issue that has to do with the security of our citizens.
I would quote here something that I often hear, that some people admire Israel for being so protective with its country, its borders, its philosophy of to thrive under any circumstances. And on the other hand, there are those who say that you are going too far sometimes with this policy. Just quoting, saying that, you know, some people admire you for that and some people condemn you about that. I would like to move on asking about...
Can I refer to this for just one second, if I may? Look, first of all, the fact that people think this way or the other would not change the way that we act and we behave. And I think that sometimes people fail to understand really what is the prism through which we see our region and where we live. Because, you know, the Palestinians look at us and see us as their rivals. And then we have the Iranians. Then we have Hezbollah. Then we have the Houthis in Yemen. But from our perspective, we have all those terror organizations, terror states, and others that are our enemies. There are very few countries in the world that are under the kind of threat that we find ourselves. Mm-hmm. Look just what happened the last 2 years. Think about the exchange that we had with Iran, with the missiles, with heavy missiles being fired at us from Iran by the hundreds. How many countries need to deal with something like this? So we are in a situation that the threat that we view is very different than anyone else. It's different to be living in Israel, understanding the threat around us and you know, and the size of both of the territory that we have in comparison to what we have around us and the size of our population in comparison to what we have around us. It's different when you are there. Yeah. It's different when we are somewhere else in the Western world that you don't really understand, don't really live this threat. Mm-hmm. So you can sit in your nice warm house in London or in Paris or in Berlin, but if you need to be living in Tel Aviv or next to Gaza or next to Lebanon, it's a very different feeling. Then you do not feel it. You exaggerate the threat. And we saw what happened on October 7th. Mm-hmm. So we feel that we are not exaggerating. Mm-hmm. We think that we are doing exactly what we need to do.
Okay. And I would like to extend this part of the conversation to the fact that we have Turkey in the game, a neighbor, that for us, it's somebody who invaded Cyprus. For you, it's somebody who is sometimes a friend, sometimes a foe, somebody who, at this point of time, is not supporting you, but is on the other side in supporting your enemies. And at the same time, we have some economic interests coming in play, and there's a geopolitical game in front of us that everybody's trying to make some sense of. What is your view on this triangle?
I'm not sure why this is a triangle. If you talk about triangles like the Israel, Turkey, Cyprus,
yes.
I think it's a bit of an artificial triangle that doesn't really exist, but I will try to speak about this. First, I need to start by saying the following. We attach great importance to our relation with Cyprus and to our relation with Greece. I need to put them also into this equation. We truly believe that this is a partnership, a strategic one, and we do not think that this partnership, this strategic cooperation that we have, should be in any way influenced by any relationship we have with any other country. And I must say, in earlier times when there were attempts to improve Israel and Turkey relations, when we spoke with our Cypriot counterparts, we had the same message that whatever is happening there will not be at the expense of Israel's relation with Cyprus. Mm-hmm. And this is an axioma, if I can use this word. This is the paradigm. This is the basic for everything. We cherish those relations that we have with Cyprus, and we do not want to jeopardize them, or we do not see them in a transactional way. They have merits on its own that we would like to keep. Mm-hmm. As for Turkey, our relations with Turkey these days are bad. There's no doubt about it. It's not our doing. It's a decision taken by the Turkish government and the Turkish president. During the war in Gaza, the horrible, horrific statements coming from Turkey were unbearable, and also their action. They were the one that decided they want to cut off trade relations. They are the one that want to bring down the level of representation in both countries. So this is their doing. Now, we are not interested in turning Turkey into an enemy. It's mm-hmm. not our interest at all. But, you know, it takes two to tango. Yeah. Okay, it needs to be from both sides. And I think that, again, the jury is still out as to what is it that Turkey wants exactly. I think that it would be good, not just for Israel, but also for Cyprus, if you could have some sort of close to normal relations with Turkey, of trade, of tourism, of some sort of cooperation. I think it's better for everybody. But again, it takes two to tango. And we need to be ready for any kind of development in the region. And I think that we will be ready. There are, because of the stand that Turkey has been taken, it's very clear to us, and my prime minister was very clear on this, we are not interested that in this international stabilization force in Gaza, there will be Turkish soldiers involved. We don't want them. We understand that this is not a good idea. So this is where we are. This is in a situation that the relations are not good with Turkey, but Turkey is an important player in this region. It would have been good if we could have changed the situation, but Ankara needs to make some decisions about what that is that they want to do.
Yeah, I see that they are getting even more angry because the relationship between Cyprus and Israel has gone a level up the past couple of years. And especially now that there is a military cooperation and we have weaponry coming from Israel. So this upsets Turkey. And is this another example of the strategic partnership that Israel puts in having a good relationship with Cyprus?
When we look at the good relationship we have with Cyprus, it's a good relation between Israel and Cyprus. This is not against any third country, including Turkey. We are not doing things with Cyprus to spite Turkey or to any way to send a message to Turkey. We do it because on the merits of things, we see value in having good cooperation with the closest like-minded country in the world that we have, which is Cyprus. So our cooperation on defense and military aspects, it was naturally created and was growing. We are happy to be part of the effort that Cyprus is doing to be able to protect its own citizens. And if we can contribute to this, and I think we can, you mentioned arms sales, but it's not just arms sales. It can be exercise, it can be transfer of know-how, it can be lessons learned from what we know. There are things that we can share together with the Cypriots that can be very beneficial for the national security of Cyprus. And because Cyprus is a good friend of ours, we would like to see the national security becoming better and stronger. Mm-hmm. I think this is the right prism to look at the situation.
There are those who don't see this cooperation in the same lens as you are, because at the same time you have an inflow of Israelis coming into Cyprus, buying a home, like many other nationalities, I would say, not only from the EU, but from other countries in the region, whenever there is a war or an uprising, there's a flood of people coming to Cyprus because they feel this safety. And now we have Israelis coming, and some Cypriots don't look this in the right eye, especially some political parties. And I know that you have some kind of, you know, contradiction with their views, and I don't know what's your point of view with this.
I would start just by saying that I think that Israelis that have made a decision to invest in Cyprus or even to move their lives into Cyprus. From what I can see, they are very happy with the decision. They feel that they are warmly welcomed here. They feel that they can prosper here, and that Cyprus is a peaceful place that accepts them in a very welcoming way. This is how I see it currently. Cyprus has full right to decide how they want to manage the whole issue of foreign investments in Cyprus. It's an internal Cypriot decision. Mm-hmm. They want to do it this way or the other way. It's there. It's an internal Cypriot decision. What you were hinting at was a statement by a very specific politician here, which I'm happy to say was not repeated since, that was singling out only the Israelis, which is unfair and also, unfortunately, brings unhappy memories of other places around the world where Jews were singled out. Mm-hmm. And there was this attempt to try to make the local population afraid or concerned about this. And this is undone. And I'm happy to say that this has not been repeated since. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen this repeating anything. And I think it's a good sign because Cyprus, and I need to stress this, is not at all an anti-Semitic place. Very low levels of anti-Semitism during recent years. And I strongly hope this is the way it's going to remain. Mm-hmm. So in this way, this one-time statement was unusual in this regard.
Yeah.
So this is where we are. I think that the not that big, I have to say, Israeli community here can contribute to Cyprus' economy, prosperity, to the society, and other elements. And I strongly believe that this can be a very good. Relations and a net positive contribution to Cyprus.
I wanted to ask you, in your view, how would you define anti-Semitism? And the reason I'm asking is because whenever this question comes up, there are those who say what I have said is not. Somebody else is saying it is. And then there is a clash on this exchange of ideas and point of views. So I would like to hear from your own words how you view this definition so people can better understand what it's all about
First of all, in
nowadays.
Sure. I don't have it in front of me right now, but there is what is known as the working definition of anti-Semitism as was adopted by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which Cyprus is an observer in and in, on its way to become a full member. And the Cyprus government adopted this. So there is a very clear definition of what is anti-Semitism. But to make it in more plain words, there is a difference between criticizing Israel government's policies, which people can agree or disagree, and between singling out a specific group living in this place, trying to create this level of irrational fear against them, based on the fact that they belong to this specific ethnic group. This is anti-Semitism. When you try to say, oh, this group, everybody belongs to this group, he is dangerous, this is risky, they do this, they do that, this is exactly where you go into anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. If you want to speak about a phenomenon that is problematic because you think it's a threat to national security, say, foreigners in general, okay, this can be xenophobia or not, I don't know, but it's not anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. But when you're singling out, you say, only this group, they are the ones, and this is not based on anything. It has not an effect that's not based on any, all it's based about is the feelings and this irrational emotion that you are trying to steer. This is where we enter the realm of anti-Semitism. And unfortunately, I have to say, in history, we learned that this process, this psychological process of saying this group, they are different, they're not like us, they are dangerous, down the road might lead to actions and acts. And we saw it in the past, that we need to refrain from getting to this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And going back to the economic ties with Israel and the geopolitical developments in the area, one important component the past year has been the GSI, this cable of connecting Europe through Greece, Cyprus, and Israel. Instead of the EU intervening, saying, don't worry, Turkey will not intervene, we will step in. Instead of Greece going to say the same, it was Israel who kind of said that we are going to move on with this project and we'll provide some stability if something happens.
It's very important to set the record straight.
Okay.
Even though you're talking about the Greece, Cyprus, Israel, okay, as the Great Sea interconnector, what we are involved in is the Cyprus-Israel one.
Yeah.
We are not involved in the Cyprus-Greece one. Yeah. And in the Cyprus-Israel one, I don't think there's any controversy and there's no question, there's not going to be any involvement. And this is what we want to promote. We mm-hmm. want to promote this project. We continue to want to promote this. There's discussion going on and hopefully it will come about. As for the Greece-Cyprus part, we want this to happen, but this is not our concern. Mm-hmm. We will not get involved there, mm-hmm. neither on the geopolitical aspect or any other aspect. This is between Cyprus and Greece, and whomever they want or decide, like it's an EU project, so I think it makes sense the EU will be involved, yeah. or maybe there's a need of, if there is a need of any kind of support from the Americans, we are not going to get involved there, and yeah. we have never hinted that yeah. in any way we will be helping to make sure that the Cyprus-Greece part is going to be implemented. We want it to be implemented, but we are not going to be involved in this element.
Mm-hmm. Only in this Cyprus-Israel
exactly.
component. And we have seen, as well as many Israelis thriving in Cyprus, investing in the community and investing with their business. Are you seeing these ties strengthening?
The Israel-Cyprus ties in general?
In an economic level, in entrepreneurship.
Well, I think that the facts are quite out there. You can see along the years, especially the 10, 15 last years, you see a continuous growth in every aspect of the economic relations. Let's take tourism as an example. Today, mm-hmm. Israel is the second most important market for tourism into Cyprus. In last year, we had over 400,000 Israeli tourists visiting Cyprus, which makes us second after the British. But if you do it per capita, we are number one. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the tourists that are coming here. It's not just the fact that apparently, from what I'm seeing, the Israeli tourist is the biggest spender per day. It's also investment in the hotel business in Cyprus. Mm-hmm. We also have Israeli companies that are buying and refurbishing hotels here in Cyprus. This is one aspect. We have, of course, a lot of investment into real estate, both as individuals buying, but also developers that come mm-hmm. here and want to build whole neighborhoods, etc. Israel is also a very important supplier of refined oil to Cyprus. So yes, I think that the relations are thriving. I think that they will continue to prosper. I think that there are a lot of opportunities there, if it's in energy or in health or climate related or environment related. There are plenty of opportunities there. I think that that maybe during the time of the war, even though the Israeli economy showed an amazing resilience, I don't think it was a time for things to expand, but now that we have the ceasefire, so many of the things that were on hold for a while can now once again be ignited and restarted. Mm-hmm.
So you believe this is a good period for investments between the countries? And there is some statements recently, I've seen that there is a lot of potential for Cypriot companies to go to Israel and benefit from the activity, the economic activity there.
You are taking away my talking points because I wanted to say just what you said before. Yes, okay. It doesn't take much to try to get Israeli investors get interested in Cyprus. It happens anyway. We see them. We see them in different fields that is, they are happening. It's more complicated to get Cypriots to invest in Israel. Mm. We have some example of this happening actually, but we would like to see more. And maybe it's a good opportunity for me here from this platform to tell Cypriots, look, it's 40-minute flight. We are very close. Cypriots are very loved in Israel. Israel is, I never spoke with an Israeli who didn't have something nice to say about Cyprus. Israel is live Cyprus. There are many opportunities in the Israeli market in different fields. Mm-hmm. And we will be very happy to try to help whoever is interested in trying to look into this. It's so close. The number of flights that we have, I think that during summertime, we were close to 200 flights per week. I think second only to Athens, maybe. Mm. It makes it so easy, the communication and the transportation. So yes, come. There are opportunities. You can be very successful in Israel.
A lot of business people are watching our podcast. So here's the invitation. Let's take advantage of it.
Completely. An open invitation. We'll be happy to help.
And I would like now to draw from your experience in Cyprus, because as we said earlier, you've been here for more than 4 years. And I think you have a really good view of things, and you've been through a lot of things the past few years.
Are you going to trick me into saying things about Cyprus politics?
No. I would like, first of all, maybe, but first of all, I would like to gain from your experience how you view Cyprus with, you know, an independent eye.
Look, I'm a bit biased. I have to say very honestly, not because I'm the ambassador here. I'm biased because when I learned about Cyprus, when I see, when I speak with people, I have a very natural, very positive relations and feelings, and I really love this place. I really love Cyprus very much on a very personal level. And I found many times in my conversation with Cypriots, it's interesting for me to see, and it's very normal, that sometimes Cypriots will tell me, no, they will criticize what's happening in Cyprus. Oh, we have these problems. Oh, we have that problems. And I understand every country has its own problems, mm-hmm. believe me. But sometimes I find myself telling them from my perspective how I see Cyprus, and I get the reaction of, we haven't thought of it this way. So I will share with you what is it that I see in a very general way. I think that what Cyprus has achieved in the last 50 years is amazing. I think I would call it even, it's almost a small miracle. Because if you go back 50 years, right after the Turkish invasion here in 1974, Cyprus was devastated. Mm-hmm. You had a country that was destroyed by war, that 37% of its territories were occupied, that it had 200,000 refugees that had nowhere to live, that the biggest port was taken, most of the touristic attractions or touristic centers of Famagusta and Kyrenia were taken, and they found themselves in a very difficult situation. And now you fast forward those 50 years and you look at Cyprus today with all normal problems that they have, but you have an EU member country with a GDP per capita, which is very nice. I would say that Cyprus is punching above its belt or above its weight. Mm-hmm. And you took yourself and you showed an amazing resilience. This is how I see it, an amazing resilience from a devastating situation to a quite prosperous one. It doesn't mean that there aren't any problems. There are problems, and you don't need me to tell you about those problems. But I think that Cypriots should have more, I'm not saying it correctly, but I think that it's good that the Cypriots would look at this and say, why? We have proven that we can handle difficult situation and come into this very relatively good place we are today. We should have maybe more faith in ourselves and what we mm-hmm. can do. So, because when I look at Cyprus, this is what I see. I see a resilient people that were able to survive a very difficult situation and take their country to a very good place. And I believe that they can continue this trend down the road.
What would be your advice, maybe drawn from experience, that will help Cyprus go to the next level?
It's a too broad question for me to answer. So I'm not sure I'm in a position to give any kind of of a specific advice. The only thing I would say in general is have faith in yourself. You have what it takes. Mm-hmm. Have faith in yourself, you can do it.
And I'll go in a bit into the local politics, just to get your things. We have a very interesting scenery now, and we have elections soon for Congress. And how do you view, these local discussions of politics, of the big parties losing their dominant positions, of smaller parties coming into the scene, and the uprising of the far right, which now is renaming themselves as Conservative Party? How do you view this situation?
I'm not going to go at all into Cypriot politics. I think it's not my role as an ambassador. But I will not leave you without any kind of answer at all. So what I can say, and you want me to draw from my experience, is that some of the phenomena we see in Cyprus are not unique to Cyprus. This is a more broad kind of phenomenon. And I can tell you about Israel. In Israel also, we have a parliamentary system, not a presidential one, but in the parliamentary system, for many years we had also two big parties. But as time passed, we see the decline of those two big parties and the rise of many medium-sized parties. And this, maybe fragmentation is too strong a word, but this situation is what we have today in the Israeli political system. And I think that it goes hand in hand with many changes that happen to us as human beings that live in this era, not just because we are Israelis or Cypriots, the rise of the social media with everything that it means, the rise of the importance of who you are, what is your identity, mm-hmm. even more than what are the policies or the ideologies that you have. Yeah. People get to learn and to know the politician almost on a personal basis. And then they want to vote for this guy, and they sometimes project on this person, man or woman, their own views, even though it's not necessarily what he believes in, but they feel that he's likable, and you can be likable a lot through this medium of social of the social networks. So I think that some of the phenomena we see in Cyprus are not unique. I don't know where this is going to go down the road, but I all I can say that I going back to the faith, I think that you can manage and you can handle the situation and the way it will develop.
Mm-hmm. And coming to an end of our conversation, because I think it had a nice flow, I would like to ask how you see things in the region. If, let's say, things go well coming back to Gaza, are there any other challenges you believe we will face in the region in the upcoming years, or things will stabilize once Gaza stabilizes?
Okay. I think that it will be a mistake to try to look at the region of the, I'm talking about the Middle East and the Eastern Mediterranean, and think that Gaza is the key for everything. It is not. Right. It is not. There are so many other trends, trajectories, things that are happening in our region that has nothing to do with Gaza. I think that a major player and a major negative player in our region is Iran, and Iran's policies of undermining stability, of trying to export the Islamic revolution to other countries, the meddling in so many other places. Look at places like Lebanon, like Yemen, like Syria, like Iraq. Everywhere that the Iranians are trying to put their hands in, the first ones to pay the price is the local population. Mm-hmm. When Iran is trying to use and to leverage its influence in those places, and they are arming their proxies, and they're sending missiles and know-how and money to their proxies, in addition for the fact that they are trying to threaten us, they are doing very bad things to the societies and the countries in which they are trying to operate. I think that in this year, We saw a decline in the power of Iran, mostly because of what happened between Iran and Israel. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Iranians were, it became visible that they are vulnerable, that they are exposed, that they were unable to prevent Israel from attacking their military nuclear program and their ballistic missiles program, showed that Iran is not as strong as some would have wanted to think. So with the decline in the power of Iran, with the change of government in Syria, with the new government in Lebanon that has a different views than the previous governments, and they are trying to do the right thing, I think there is an opportunity. Now, I don't want to overstate this opportunity because it's very fragile and there are still very negative forces that work against it. But I think that Lebanon has a new chance, and I think that Syria might have a new chance, and I think that Iraq has a new chance, and maybe also the people of Iran that don't like the regime have a new chance as well. That we, if we are, I don't want to say the word lucky, but if things work in the positive way, we might look back 20 years from now and say, ah, this is the time, this is what happened that put the Middle East on the right track. It's not a given. Yeah. Things can go very bad still. And we see what Iran is trying to do. They are trying to rebuild their power. We see what Hezbollah is trying to do. We see what Hamas is trying to do. It's not that the bad guys have said, oh, we put out our hands and we're not going to fight anymore. Not at all. It requires cooperation. And this is why I come back to the Israel, Cyprus, Greece on the one hand, and Israel with moderate Arab countries on the other hand, and the hope for the expansion of the Abraham Accords that might create together some sort of an alliance, maybe it's too strong a word, but partnership that will be a moderate, stabilizing force, working for the good of this region, and bring some sort of new hope and prosperity for the people of this region.
And you see that the time seems better now because of the change of the U.S., how they view and apply things. Because it seems that the president is, you know, having this pro-peace, let's get things done in a more peaceful way.
No, I think that all American administration always were pro-peace. This is not the difference. I think one big difference, and I know this sounds sometimes hard for a Western ear, but the fact that we have this new opportunity has to do with the fact that Israel had to and was almost coerced into using force against Hezbollah, against Iran because of the threat. And it was this use of force that is bringing about this opening for a change. Now, it is true that the current administration is active, is bringing maybe some other aspects or other ways of operation that were less common in the past, but we saw they were very successful in the first term with the Abraham Accords. Let's hope that now the combination of a very an administration that is willing to do what he thinks is the right thing to do, together with this new opening that we have here, might bring about positive results. It's good to be hopeful, but also cautious.
Well, I think this is a good message that hopefully one day we're going to look back to what we discussed right here and see that this was an opportunity that we took advantage as humanity.
You know, in our region, people used to say many times, inshallah, with God willing, let's hope that this will happen.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Αγαπητοί φίλοι, ευχαριστούμε και εσάς που είσαστε μαζί μας και σε αυτό το επεισόδιο. Θα τα πούμε στο επόμενο.